Welcome back to another great edition of Locked On Bills. I'm your host, as always, Kevin Misery, here with a special guest, Mike Danger, co-host of the Sports Bar and ESPN Rochester. Been looking to get the Rochester guys on here for a while. Been had some requests for some coverage out of Rochester. I know Mike has a great show over there. Check him out. Mike, how you doing today?
Kevin, thank you for having me. I'm doing great.
Excellent. Really looking forward to this edition. Really great to bring a fresh perspective on. First and foremost, did have to ask you, how's your feeling around Rochester, around the Bills? It's just something I always like to ask. It's just such an interesting sports market.
Sure. I think in Rochester, you've got a strong Buffalo sports fan presence. It's Bills, it's Sabres. We have a lot of love for our local teams, the Amherst, of course, in the wintertime, and the Rochester Red Wings in the summertime. And then Rochester has kind of proven itself to not be able to support much more than that, as our minor league soccer team and our minor league outdoor lacrosse team have kind of been put on ice. And we've also got indoor lacrosse, the Nighthawks, in the wintertime, which does really well in the MLL. So great sports market. But yeah, the primary fandom for a Rochester sports fan still remains the Bills 1 and the Sabres 2.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate because I actually grew up in the Rochester Junior Rhinos programs myself before heading to Buffalo, and obviously now back in Rochester. It was disappointing to lose the Rhinos. Kind of hit home for me hard. I heard they may be coming back in a year or two. So we'll see what happens there. But something I get asked, and I want to relay it to you in this segment, is what would you say the percentage of Bills fans are of the total NFL fans in Rochester? That's something that I get asked quite frequently.
You might have a few Patriot fans in here, but like when we came up in the Bills were in their heyday, right? Didn't you just have like a lot of, don't you remember growing up in Rochester, a lot of Rochester fans that were like Dolphin fans, just to go counter to all the people that were Bills fans at the time? And I feel like there might be still some of that with some of the Patriot fans, but it still seems like a really high number to me. It's got to be somewhere in the 75 to 80% range.
That's great. I mean, diving into the team, and I think it's a really interesting year that's finally catching up with the Buffalo Bills. I think this was their plan last year, but they ran into some wins, some good defensive play, some good turnovers, some lucky and good bounces. It's turning into a season that's going to be a lost season, as many of our listeners know. But I do have to ask you, Josh McCown filling in for another, now an injured Sam Darnold, Darnold v. Allen, we are not going to see here in the New York Jets game. Might see it later in the season. If it was you, do you play Josh Allen, or do you rest the room through the bye?
Josh McCown versus Nathan Peterman, just what the NFL wants, right? This is a marquee matchup. But if you have leaves to rake, I would say Sunday afternoon right around 1 o'clock would be a good time to get outside and get that task done. If Josh Allen is healthy, to answer your question, Kevin, yeah, if Josh Allen is healthy, he's playing. I think he's missing valuable reps. I know that he doesn't have the supporting cast. We all see it. The offensive line was terrible against Chicago last week and didn't really do much to help Nathan Peterman. I don't know that Josh Allen is going to, be safe back there. I can't guarantee his safety, but I can guarantee that he'll learn from the valuable reps that he's missing right now.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you. And I think that's what people are tuning in for at this point. I think that the Jets are better with Josh McCown. He played pretty well last year. Yeah. Sam Darnold coming off his 4-interception game. Are we as sure as we were that Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold are that much further along than Josh Allen?
All these rookie quarterbacks look less than stellar, right? I mean, the bottom four, I think earlier this year, the bottom four rated passers in the league, according to, or the bottom four offenses, according to DVOA earlier in the league, and I didn't check it this week, but they were all teams that were led by rookie quarterbacks. It was the Jets and the Browns and the Cardinals and, of course, the Bills. So, these are the growing pains of having a rookie quarterback, and sure, you'd like to see little flashes, some more flashes and some more glimmers of hope for the future, but I think they're just learning. They're going to take their lumps. They're going to make mistakes. They learn from those mistakes. And I'll always remember, in terms of Sam Darnold specifically, I mean, his first play from scrimmage this year, a pick six, and they came back and won that game. And I think something that Darnold has that Allen hasn't had up to this point, at least up until the point where they brought in Derek Anderson, is that kind of mentor. I don't know how important that is in the overall development of a quarterback, but it sure looked important when Sam Darnold just threw a pick six on his first play from scrimmage And the first person he went to go talk to was Josh McCown. So, you know, maybe having Derek Anderson around, at least if he is around, helps out Josh Allen's development a little bit. You might have a lame duck head coach after one season in Wilkes. I mean, Wilkes, you know, in his wisdom, thought bringing Mike McCoy in to be the offensive coordinator would be a good idea. That failed miserably. And now Byron Leftwich, you know, if he's able to turn this offense around in Arizona, maybe he's the guy that can get through to Josh Allen, but, or I'm sorry, to Josh Rosen. But Josh Rosen now, you know, again, learning a new system, learning a new, developing a new relationship with Leftwich. All of these guys have had their adversities in their rookie seasons. And I really don't think you'll be able to judge, you know, who the class of this draft will be until you're into year three, and maybe even as late as year four. By year four, you hopefully know what you have, right? And I think next year is going to be, there are going to be some more growing pains next year, but you see a little bit more of those glimpses, those glimmers where, yeah, this is the guy that they drafted. This is the reason why they drafted him where they did.
Yeah, and I mean, I think something that's pretty interesting to this fan base, and it's something I want to ask you, do you think the Buffalo Bills offense, and particularly the entire team leadership, the whole shebang, do you think they're better with Josh Allen starting? The team is 2-2 with him starting and completing games. Do you put any water in that, or do you think he just happened to be in those games where they happened to scrape out a win? I personally think that the team plays better with Josh Allen. What's kind of your opinion on that?
I agree with you 100%. And, you know, when the season ends and the Bills have the worst offense in the league, if they have the worst offense in the league, and it sure looks like that's going to be the case, I'm not going to really put that on Brian Daboll. I mean, you're going to want heads to roll and you're going to want somebody to be held accountable. And certainly you might see somebody on this staff lose their job, which we wouldn't wish on anybody. But what I like about Brian Daboll when Josh Allen has been in the game is he's done a good job of coming up with a game plan and scheming receivers open and making it as easy as possible for Josh Allen to not fail.
Do you have, if it was you, and the team needs to take accountability on what's happened here, Sean McDermott is obviously, you know, safe for a little bit here. What's your move on what do you think the team needs to move on from? Are you looking at Juan Castillo, the offensive line coach, maybe, as you've seen some significant changes at the offensive line position? And you will see some going forward this week. I think Jeremiah Searles will get a start. I think that Teller will get a start here shortly. And, you know, PFF would grade those two as potential players that should be in your starting lineup over their incumbents, particularly Vlad Dukas and Jordan Mills. Do you think that Juan Castillo gets the axe? Do you think he's going to be the kind of fall guy? You know, for me, Danny Crossman's another guy that should be on the cutting block. What's your moves for the offseason coaching related?
I don't know. I don't know that you move any of them. I mean, you know, you mentioned Castillo and I would say, yeah, you know, somebody needs to be held accountable. But these, you know, it's not so much that the offensive line doesn't know what they're doing. They're just not talented. They just don't have any talent on that side of the ball. You know, you could say David Culley, you know, it's a quarterback's coach. He was never a quarterback. He was a wide receiver. Is that the guy? You know, I don't know. Does that hurt the development of Josh Allen? I mean, every move that you make has to be run through the lens of how is this going to affect our quarterback, our franchise quarterback. And is this something that's going to make him better if we move on from this personnel? I don't know that they should move on, even with the offense being historically bad. And you also have to factor in the relationship that comes with this as well. I mean, Sean McDermott has a relationship that's with Castillo specifically that dates back to their time together in Philadelphia. That was a long time ago. So these guys know each other well, and they probably have developed a really a strong trust with each other. And you bring somebody new, what does that do to the chemistry? What does that do to the big thing that they always talk about, right, Kevin? The culture. I mean, what, you know, bringing in new people, does that shake up the culture at One Bills Drive? I don't know that you do move on from any of these guys. And you know, there's something to be said, I think, for continuity with this organization, an organization that, let's face it, for the better part of the drought, didn't have any continuity. And we kind of scratch our head and go, well, I wonder why they're mediocre every year. Yeah, it turns out if you have some stability within the organization and alignment from the top down, you put yourself in a better chance for long-term success.
Right. And I talked to quite frequently other members of media and other members of different teams, and they're like, the Bills just cannot succeed if they're consistently flipping to their coaching staffs every 2 to 3 years. There's just no sustainability there. And what I find interesting, though, is that Leslie Frazier is going to lead another top five defense. You know, year one wasn't quite statistically there, but there's a lot of DVOA stats that showed that the unit was very good, obviously opportunistic with turnovers. Leslie Frazier is a guy that could get head coaching consideration around the league as we see a couple openings come available, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was being considered for the Indianapolis job that Josh McDaniel decided to pass on. And I think that would be when you have a top five defense, a top two defense right now as Buffalo has, according to that DVOA metric on Football Outsiders. Yeah, I mean, that's going to get the attention of a lot of people. And especially when you consider, you know, there's a handful of guys that I would say are very talented on the defensive side of the ball for those, but they're guys that are overachieving, really. I mean, like, did we know anything about Jordan Poyer before last year? You know, have we, you know, they've gotten something out of Shaq Lawson all of a sudden. Shaq Lawson is having his quietly his best season. You know, he still can play and he's vocal and he leads by example. But to get back to Leslie Frazier. Yeah, Leslie Frazier, you know, probably will be considered a head coaching candidate given his experience, whether or not he wants to do it. And I'm less worried about Leslie Frazier leaving, by the way, with a defensive-minded head coach like Sean McDermott. I have a feeling that the defense, you know, could actually get better next year, especially, Kevin, play this out. I mean, let's say the Bills are picking in the top three and as they're projected to right now, and we know that this incoming draft class is more defensive-heavy, especially at the top end of the first round. If you don't trade out of that pick, which I don't know that they necessarily need to, you're going to get a stud defensive player that makes a good defense even better next year. And knowing the tendencies of Sean McDermott and how he loves that defensive side of the ball, and you know, that's the foundation of this team, I wouldn't be upset if Leslie Frazier went somewhere else, because I think whoever they bring in to be the defensive coordinator, provided they have trust with the head coach, they're going to be a good unit again next year.
Yeah, like you mentioned, Ed Oliver is a name that really sticks out, a guy that could fill in for Kyle Williams next year. Really a three technique that they'd be interested in being the defensive tackle of the future, plugging what no one wants to hear as probably a hole on the defense that you're created by potentially Kyle Williams. They need to re-sign Lorenzo Alexander. And then worry about this cornerback two spot that's honestly the only hole on this entire unit right now after they released Philip Gaines today. The Bills, I just did the research on it. Do you remember the Bills actually going 7-3 with EJ Gaines at cornerback? Interesting stat. So this defense ticks around their cornerbacks. I think it's particularly something that they need to address this offseason as well. And Greedy Williams, a guy from LSU who could link up with Trey White. Could you think that that's far-fetched that the Bills actually might spend a top five pick on defense?
I'm telling you, if you have a top three pick, you know, your odds of that pick being a hit, I think, are just so much better than waiting till later in the draft or trading out of that pick. You know, I got to imagine there's an elite talent on the defensive side of the ball that could be a difference maker. I mean, imagine what this defense looks like if you have a Greedy Williams on one side, or if you have that run stuffer and Oliver in the middle, and or you have, you know, to go with a Tremaine Edmonds. And you know, there's the defense is good, and it could be even better next year if you were to do that. All you would need at that point is an average competent offense to be competitive in games. I mean, I think to myself, the way the defense is playing this year, if you had an offense that could just score you 17 points a game, that's it. You're not asking them to do more than score you 17 points. You would be in these games.
Now talk to me about, I'm glad you brought up the offense and you know, really needing just an average offense to compete in this league, which is true with this, especially with the potential of adding a top five pick on the defensive side of the ball, which looks like what they're going to do. $100 million are what they're projected to have, and based on my projection, as well as a healthy cap going forward, really only Star Latulele on the books for a long term. You're going to have McCoy, Hughes, Charles Clay come off the following year if they're not off next year. What's your offensive plan? What are you going to do with all that money, considering that the Bills will probably plug one of their only holes on defense with their first round pick? What are you doing with $100 million?
Well, you're going to start in Carolina, and you're going to raid their cupboard. That's where you're going to start. No, I and I'm only kind of half joking. I mean, like, if you're thinking about free agents for the offensive side of the ball, would you take a look at a Devin Funchess? I would. I mean, you know, and that seems to be the way these guys have kind of always operated. They love to kind of go with what they're familiar with, even to a fault. I mean, Kelvin Benjamin is a certifiable bust since he's been with Buffalo. Yet these guys thought that he would be worth, you know, going after at the trade deadline last year. I could certainly see them taking some free agents from Carolina I'm trying to remember what the guy's name is on the offensive line too. There's an offensive lineman that becomes a free agent in Carolina. He's not playing this year because he's
Darrell Williams, the right
guy. Darrell Williams, he's got the torn ACL from earlier in the preseason. So, you know, I would start with those two guys and see what else, you know, happens, but do a little bit of a sales pitch on these guys too, to get them to come to Buffalo. Right. I mean, you know, look, you're coming into this situation that was historically bad in 2018. And, you know, we've got a rookie quarterback who hasn't proven anything, and we're rebuilding our offensive line. Hey, where do I sign? You know, that's going to be a tough sell for somebody. You know, it's going to be, you know, I hope they don't fall into the trap of overpaying for these free agents just so they come to Buffalo. I mean, I don't, the Mario Williams trap, right? Like, don't overpay for somebody and is the only way that you can get them to come and play in red, white, and blue.
What I find interesting, especially, is I could see, instead of a couple big names, lots of money being spent, they're going to utilize the trade market for sure. I think they'll maybe take on a contract of a player or two that they want. I could see a Golden Tate coming in too. He might command a lot of money, but might be a position that they would do so at. What's going to be interesting is I think they're going to try to find maybe $4 to $6 million deals similar to Poyer. Hyde's close to that, actually. They're going to find those deals and maybe sign 10 to 12 of them. What a luxury to have. And maybe you miss on a couple of them, but you can if it's not a crazy deal and you're taking a shot on 8 to 10 guys, which I believe they have to do in the offense. They need to find three offensive linemen, a potential tight end, potential running back, depending on who you are, one or two receivers. And obviously they can have some via the draft, but as we've talked about, I think that's going to come on the defensive side of the ball and with their first pick.
Yeah.
There are going to be some players to find, and, you know, with their 37th overall pick and their, 69th overall pick, et cetera. What do you think that if you were to spend maybe a contract that you would, you know, quote unquote, call Mario Williams, what position are you doing it at?
Let's go right tackle. I mean, somewhere on the offensive line, you know, I don't know that you would spend Mario Williams type money on a lineman, but, you know, you have to shore up that offensive line. Deion Dawkins is probably the guy that's sticking around, right? And I think, you know, I'm not impressed with Russell Bodine. You're going to have to live with that for the rest of this year. Ryan Groy was a two-year deal, so he's done at the end of the year. We've seen enough of Mills. We've seen enough of Dukas. We've seen enough of Miller. So you're really going to have to invest on that offensive side of the ball. And I don't know that I hate the idea of, as you're suggesting, going out and getting a handful of guys, you know, at a little bit of a cheaper price. I like the idea of them building a roster first and foremost through the draft. But if you are going to bring in guys from free agency, you're getting a value on those guys. You're not overpaying for those guys. And if you are going to spend that kind of money on those guys, you're making sure that you are getting the value. I think that's why, you know, Sammy Watkins was expendable, right? I mean, we're paying him all this money, or we're going to potentially pay him all this money once his rookie deal is up, and he's not even available to us. So let's move on from that. We were chatting earlier today about the Patriots and how there's always been a narrative with Bills fans, right? That if a Buffalo Bill leaves the Bills, he's going to become a better player all of a sudden. You're going to see him be more productive. And I'll listen to that to a point when there's data that supports it. And we kind of all laughed at the Patriots when they went out and got Stephon Gilmore and paid him all that money, especially the way his time in New England started. And then, you know, he all of a sudden, he figured it out. They got it together. You know, I think the way he's playing now, he's worth every penny of what they're paying him. The Patriots have always done it in a way where, you know, we're going to bring in players, but we're going to get value for those players. We're going to constantly evaluate those players. I mean, you know, and it's kind of what makes them what they are. View their players as commodities. They view free agents as commodities. They buy low, they sell high, and they get the most value for their players as they can. And I hope that that's the approach the Bills are taking. I think anybody that's smart in the NFL is viewing it that way. I can't wait to see which team overpays for somebody like a Le'Veon Bell. That team, in my opinion, is making a mistake, and especially at that position, and they're going to be hurting themselves in the long run.
I want to ask you a question about a player that they may have left go. I think two deals stick out to me. One, I did not like the Ronald Darby for Jordan Matthews pick, although they got a pick out of it. I still think that Ronald Darby could have been a cornerback too on this team. I do think they questioned the character there. And number two, Robert Woods, a free agent they let walk year one, who to me has been worth every penny of his deal that we thought was a little bit expensive. Kind of what are your opinions on Darby and Woods?
Yeah, I like Darby, but I think at the time that they made that deal, that they were, their plan was in motion, and they knew that they were going to have to acquire picks if they were going to have a chance at getting their quarterback in the draft. And I think they targeted this draft specifically as the draft that they wanted to get that quarterback because of how deep the quarterback class was in the 2018 draft. And as far as Woods goes, I mean, I just don't see this team ponying up that kind of money for a wide receiver that prior to getting that deal in LA was kind of pedestrian. I mean, the statistics he put up were not anything earth shattering. We saw some flashes, but you get him now in an offense with a quarterback that can deliver the ball and a creative head coach with an offensive mind. And yeah, he looks to be productive. And you know, are they getting value for Robert Woods? You know, we're all in because we know that our quarterback is making strides. We're going to get him every single weapon we can possibly give him. And we're going to do everything while still on his rookie deal, while we still have the most important position on the field at a discount. When, you know, this is the, I'm not saying anything you don't already know. This is the blueprint that successful teams have been following. The Seahawks did it. The Rams are doing it. The Eagles done it, obviously, and won a Super Bowl last year. So I think smart teams are trying to do that. The Bears are doing it this year, right? Smart teams are trying to do that because they have the ability to do it with that quarterback rookie contract being at such a discount.
You mentioned their rookie picks, needing to trade for those. That was their master plan. We all knew it. If the Bills say they somehow, just in a different world, they had the first overall pick in this draft, do you think Josh Allen's the guy? Or do you think that they were eyeing a Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield? Kind of, oh. We knew that Rosen was fourth. What's your opinion on how they had him ranked?
Man, that's tough. I don't know that I was ever that impressed with Baker Mayfield. When we talk to a lot of people that watch a lot of film, and prior to last year's draft, and again, this isn't anything that is shocking that y'all have heard. I mean, Josh Allen was pretty polarizing as a prospect. You had some guys that loved the arm, but just kind of viewed him as this raw, unrefined product that was going to need a lot of work and a lot of time. And you know, obviously remains to be seen as to whether or not the Bills will be able to do that. I always liked Darnold. I just like Darnold, and you know, I'm probably guilty, Kevin, of falling in love with a player based on a small sample size. With Sam Darnold, it was that, you know, it was the Rose Bowl. It was the Penn State USC game, and I was just like, wow, this kid is something. There's going to be something to this kid when he comes out of college. And you know, I think that remains to be seen as well. But if I had,
are you worried about the turnovers with him? Are you worried about those?
I mean, no, because he's a rookie and he's going to make mistakes. And you know, and Peyton Manning, I think, has the record for most interceptions thrown by a rookie quarterback. And you know, a lot of it's going to have to do with coaching. And I don't know that he has. I think Jeremy Bates is more than capable as an offensive coordinator. I don't know, you know, what Todd Bowles' long-term future is. And you certainly could make a case for rookie quarterbacks that have defensive-minded head coaches struggling rather than, you know, what you have in LA and Sean McVay. And that's such a dangerous thing too. Be careful what you wish for, because you could make a change at head coach and sure, you could end up with a Sean McVay. You could also end up with a Ben McAdoo, right? I mean, like, you don't really know what you're going to get. And Sean McVay is a pretty rare case right now and has that team looking pretty good. But I if it was me, and you know, Gene and I, my co-host in the sports bar, we were watching the draft and we all remember how we felt when we heard them say Josh. And then they said Allen, and Gene, you know, was just out of his mind. How could they take Allen over Rosen? We all kind of thought Rosen could have been the guy, right, based on what we saw, based on what we heard from all the scouts. And now I see Rosen on the sideline in Arizona or you know, playing in Arizona. I'm like, yeah, I guess I'm probably okay with him not being the Bills' starting quarterback.
Like, Rosen was a polarizing prospect that a lot of people didn't mention. It's pretty much on record through a couple specifically Arizona locations that Rosen, you know, he was not their first choice. It was said that the Bills had to pony up more draft pick compensation because Arizona was in talks to get retrieve the seventh overall pick as well to draft Josh Allen.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting debate. I think that after all it was said and done, all of the four quarterback teams had Rosen fourth. So that's interesting. I wonder if he's a polarizing leadership guy. Allen's done everything right. He's 500 when he starts and completes a game. It's an interesting there. So we'll see what we have going forward in Josh Allen, and we'll see if the team made the right choice over the right Josh. I am with you. I do think that they loved Sam Darnold and just did not with all their ammunition, just couldn't go up and get him. There was no possible way without trading everything, single thing they had, and they weren't feeling, they weren't really willing to do that. So,
and Josh Rosen has probably the most punchable face out of all the NFL quarterbacks in the league, doesn't he? You just look at him and you're like, wow, you know, we heard he was kind of smug, but you just see him and you're like, yeah, this guy's got like a, you know, Jay Cutler retires and he gets replaced with Josh Rosen. That's exactly what we need in the NFL.
You laugh at it, but I truly think that that factored into a role as a leader within the culture and the McDermott discussions and interview process. So I don't know. I wonder if that's actually a thing with them. Do you sign Sam Bradford finally? Like, do you bring him in to be a veteran?
No, okay. I'm not interested. No. Furthermore, I don't get the sense that AJ McCarron was really excited to be in Buffalo or to play second fiddle to anybody on this roster in terms of the quarterback position. So why keep him around? Go ahead and move on from him. And with Sam Bradford, I wonder the same thing. Like, you know, these guys, you know, do they have the self-awareness to realize because this is all they know, this is all they've done. And a guy like Bradford, who's made so much money through the course of his career for doing absolutely
$15 million for three starts.
Just insane, right? So, you know, why bring him in? Why bring in that headache? Let somebody else make that mistake if they decide to make that mistake. And that's before you even talk about, can he still play? And I don't know that he can. I mean, I will look back at that week one performance last year when he was in Minnesota against the Saints and say, well, that was a nice swan song. That was the best I think he had ever looked, and I don't know that he will ever look that good again. That game very well broke him. He came back. I think he tried to come back in the middle of the season last year. I remember because it was against the Bears, and the Bears just embarrassed him. He was completely just shell-shocked, and you certainly saw some of that early this year with Arizona. Can you imagine him behind this offensive line? I can't. No way.
I mean, the Bills were interested. They were bidding on him in the offseason. So we'll see if he is a guy that they, you know, I would believe he would come in and he'd have to play second fiddle, like you mentioned. I don't believe he'd be interested in that. So we'll see.
Well, Kevin, you mentioning that the Bills were interested and that they were placing bids on Sam Bradford. I mean, I love hearing that because they didn't get him, and they didn't get him because they didn't overspend.
Couldn't agree more. I think it's a really good, I mean, glad we got to give credit to Bean for getting a pick in the first place for a couple of players, Marshall Newhouse, even though it's a future seventh, and a fifth round pick for AJ McCarron. That's some wizard work there. And I mean, hey, it's all part of their long-term planning process. Something that a lot of people don't want to hear, get Josh Allen right and get him playing. Is that kind of the way that you see the final of the season going? You want to see maybe another six starts from Josh Allen?
Yeah, and in those starts, I mean, look, you know, I say it all the time. The secret to happiness in life is managing expectations. And if your expectation is that, you know, prior to the season was that they're going to be a playoff team, well, then you're probably pretty disappointed and you want to, you know, you don't want to hear anything about the process and you want to set fire to the Bills. Well, you know, I think a lot of us kind of went into this year thinking that this was the way the team was going to play. You know, and I have them winning maybe two more games this year, maybe three.
Sounds right.
And you know, what are you looking for? You're looking for Josh Allen to be a centerpiece to those victories. And, you know, maybe there's some nice, statistical days for him. Maybe there's some days where he crafts a game winning drive. I mean, you can look back at quarterbacks when they were rookies and, you know, I'll single out Matt Stafford. I remember there was a game that Matt Stafford as a rookie played against the Browns in Detroit, and he took an absolute beating, but he was able to lead the Lions to a comeback victory. And it was that moment where I'm like, you know, Matt Stafford's going to be a good quarterback in this league. And you could tell that the team responded to it, and they kind of rallied around him, and he showed the ability that he has. And I think Josh Allen has has a strong skill set, identify what the defenses are throwing at him and not be fooled, you know, and can Brian Daboll continue to put him in positions to make plays as well? Because, you know, the NFL moves pretty quick. And if you're a defensive coordinator and you're scouting Josh Allen and you see his tendencies and they're not changing week to week, some defense is going to have a real big day, picking off Josh Allen and capitalizing off of his mistakes.
I love that game-winning drive against Tennessee, although there was a lot of runs on that play. He made a really good screen pass to Ray McCloud. And I loved it. I think that that's what you needed to do. And I think we'll see that going forward. They have a weaker schedule. I tweeted it out, got a lot of run about their future opponents. Very weak schedule to finish, actually the weakest schedule in the second half of the year compared to the strongest schedule to start the year. So like you mentioned, could see two or three victories here, might take them into the sixth, the eighth overall pick range, which isn't technically a bad place for them to be. I like my guy, Anthony Johnson from UB. I think he's Jadeveon Clowney's cousin. So he's going to be just a great athlete. He's going to be, in my opinion, he's going to jump in the top 20. I think he's a dynamic receiver if they're looking to go that route. But I do think there's going to be enough defensive talent on the board for them to utilize that fifth to seventh overall pick roughly. Lastly, Mike, tell us where we can find your stuff. I'm in your home market now in Rochester. Tell our listeners, if they want to tune into your show, how to do it, where to do it, what they can expect from your show.
Well, I love it. Well, if you're listening and you're in Rochester, you know we're on ESPN Rochester. You can hear us on AM 950 or 95.7 FM. We stream online at ESPNRochester.com. If you're a Buffalo listener, then you're probably familiar with the radio.com app. Great app, a great resource. Our radio station is owned by Entercom. They own radio stations around the country and actually the leader in America in terms of sports programming. We have more alignment with more pro sports teams than any other company out there. And through the radio.com app, if you're a Bills fan, you can, of course, listen to ESPN Rochester. You can get Bills coverage on our sister station in Buffalo, WGR. If you're a fan of the Eagles, we have Sports Radio WIP. I'm a Bears fan, so I spend a lot of time listening to 670 The Score out of Chicago, and they're all in one place, the radio.com app. It's a great app to download to your phone, just a nice little resource. It connects you to a lot of great sports stations, not just in our region, here in Rochester and in Buffalo, but you know, across the country.
Appreciate that. Thank you so much for coming on. It's great to have the listeners. And we're going to bring you back. I mean, whenever you're free down the road, maybe off season stuff, December, January-ish. Definitely want to bring you back and kind of recap what we talked about today. So from Locked On Bills, I'm Kevin Messeri, and that's Mike Danger.
Thanks, Kevin.